Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Wednesday, September 29th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening as always. We have a beautiful start to our Wednesday. Anticipating some rain over the next couple days, Wednesday night through Friday. And one forecast I saw was estimating about 1.5 inches of rain by the time this system is through. And then hopefully cooler temperatures and a nice weekend ahead. We'll take a more detailed look at our forecast as we conclude our time together. Destined for Fame is the title of the first article. The new members to the Iowa Central Community College Hall of Fame are being inducted on Saturday. The head men's basketball coach for 40 seasons and an instructor who organized the Festival of Nations are among those to be inducted into the Iowa Central Hall of Fame at Iowa Central Community College on Saturday. The honorees are Dennis Pilcher, former head basketball coach and athletic director, Patty Kroonquist, retired advanced instructor and international student advisor, Denny Drake, senior vice president of corporate integrity and general counsel for Unity Point Health, Jeff Harris, retired high school teacher and musical director, Tony Middleton, first team, All-American football player, Haley Hopps, standout volleyball and softball player, and the 1982 men's basketball team. For more than 50 years, Iowa Central has helped students get to the next step to achieve their dreams and be a vibrant part of their community, said college president Jesse Ulrich. Our Hall of Fame event provides Iowa Central, the fellow alumni, faculty, and staff a chance to recognize their contributions and accomplishments. Denny Drake graduated from Iowa Central in 1971 and earned a bachelor's degree from Drake University in 1973. He earned a law degree from Drake University in 1977. He created and led the law department for Unity Point Health with oversight of 18 lawyers and offices in 3 states. He is past chair of the Iowa Bar Association's Health Law Section. Drake will be enshrined as a distinguished alumnus. Jeff Harris earned an associate degree from Iowa Central in 1975. He earned bachelor's and master's degrees from Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. He taught at Westwood High School in Mesa, Arizona. During his career, 400 of his students earned All-State Singers Honors. He was also the musical director for Mesa Musical Theater and director of music at Scottsdale United Methodist Church. Harris was the founding director of the Sonoran Desert Chorale. Harris will be enshrined as a distinguished alumnus. Patty Kroonquist's roles at the college included advanced instructor, international student advisor, coordinator of the Modern Language Program, and chair of the Iowa Central Festival of Nations. She is a graduate of Iowa Central and will be enshrined as a distinguished faculty member. Tony Middleton played linebacker for the Tritons in 1972 and 1973. Both years he was a first-team All-American. Iowa Central went undefeated in regular season play both years, and Middleton played in the 1973 National Championship game. He earned a bachelor's degree from New Mexico State University. He is retired from a career in the Army and the Department of Defense. Haley Hopps received first-team All-Region honors in both volleyball and softball in 2007. She was also first-team All-Region in 2006. She holds several sports career records. She was also an academic All-American with a 3.9 GPA. Dennis Pilcher was a coach for 51 years, with 40 of those being at Iowa Central. He had 759 wins at Iowa Central. His win total is 856, placing him 12th all-time among junior college head coaches. His teams went to the national tournament in 1990 and 2012. He was named Region 11 Coach of the Year in those years. He coached 4 first-team All-Americans. The 1982 basketball team went 28-4, losing in the finals to Burlington during Pilcher's third season. The team had many area players. Its roster included 3 from Palmer, Bob Beneke, Brent Aiden, and Barry Aiden. Other local players included Craig Alljets of Pomeroy, Dean Black of Barnum, Tom Doster of Manson, Tony Henderson of Laverne, and Mike Mosley of Fort Dodge. The Iowa Central Hall of Fame banquet and induction ceremonies will begin at 5 o'clock Saturday at the Iowa Central Community College campus in Fort Dodge. It will begin with a social hour followed by the honoring of the inductees. A buffet meal will be served. A silent auction will be held. Tickets are $25, and you may call the Iowa Central Bookstore at 574-1081. That's 574-1081 to purchase tickets. The Webster County Law Enforcement Center gained a new assistant jail administrator at the regular Board of Supervisors meeting. Heather Perry's promotion from corrections officer to assistant jail administrator was approved by the Webster County Board of Supervisors Tuesday morning. Webster County Sheriff Luke Fleener addressed the supervisors. "I want to take a moment to recognize Sergeant Heather Perry with her nearly 7 years of experience with our department," he said. Fleener said after Shauna Dinklaw was promoted to jail administrator, they were left with a vacancy for assistant jail administrator and began a search to fill that position. "During that process, Sergeant Perry did the interview process with several of us and did a work study. She's shown great enthusiasm and willingness to learn the administrative side of corrections and is clearly the best choice for this position," Fleener said. Dinklaw also spoke to the Board of Supervisors to offer her support of the promotion. "Heather has been with us for several years. She started in May 2015. From there, she was promoted to the night shift sergeant with her knowledge of policies and procedures of the jail. From there, for the last 2 years, she was promoted to the day shift sergeant, and she has learned a lot more about the inner workings of the jail structure and making new contacts to benefit the jail," said Dinklaw. "We actually had a couple people apply for the position, and it was a very tough decision. We did the work study, and Heather excelled at everything that was thrown at her. She would do a great job in this position." Perry introduced herself to the board and said, "I'd like to thank both Shauna and Fleener for this opportunity, and I'm honored." The promotion was approved unanimously by the Board of Supervisors. A Harcourt man is facing multiple charges. He is charged with sexual abuse and incest. A Harcourt man is charged with multiple counts of sexual abuse following an investigation by the Webster County Sheriff's Office. Matthew J. Davis, 41, is charged with 3 counts of third-degree sexual abuse, Class C felonies, and 3 counts of incest, Class D felonies. Deputies were contacted on Monday regarding the alleged abuses, which occurred in rural Webster County near Harcourt, according to the Sheriff's Office. During the investigation of the alleged offenses, Webster County Sheriff's deputies conducted multiple witness interviews and executed search warrants in order to learn additional information. By the end of the day Monday, detectives with the Webster County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigations Division filed 6 criminal complaints against Davis. He is currently held in the Webster County Jail. His initial appearance was Tuesday in Webster County Magistrate Court. Davis was ordered held on $165,000 cash-only bond. The Webster County Sheriff's Office was assisted by detectives with the Fort Dodge Police Department's Criminal Investigations Division and the Webster County Attorney's Office. Anyone with information regarding the alleged offenses is encouraged to contact Webster County Sheriff's Office directly or anonymously to the Webster County Crime Stoppers at 573-1444. The investigation is ongoing. Prairie Lakes AEA has received a mental health grant. Funding will support educator training. The statistics are alarming. Since 2018, suicide has been the second leading cause of death for adolescents between the ages of 10 and 14 and 15 and 24. More than 1 in 5 students in the schools served by Prairie Lakes Area Education Agency who completed the Iowa Youth Survey in 2018 reported that they had seriously considered killing themselves in the 12 months prior. The Social, Emotional, and Behavioral Health Team at Prairie Lakes AEA has been facilitating training for educators the past 3 years to address those statistics. So when the agency learned about a federal grant opportunity to sustain and expand upon those trainings, team members jumped in to write a grant proposal to establish the Prairie Lakes AEA Mental Health Awareness Training Project. The agency recently learned it was one of 145 projects awarded this grant and is the only recipient in Iowa. The Mental Health Awareness Training, MHAT, grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, known as SAMHSA, totals $125,000 each year for 5 years. The funding will primarily be used to train educators and school staff on how to recognize the signs and symptoms of mental health disorders and support students with serious mental illnesses and or serious emotional disturbances. The training also teaches the skills needed to respond and reach out to provide initial help and support to someone who may be developing a mental health or substance use challenge or experiencing a mental health crisis. We applied for the grant to sustain the support that we've already developed and have been providing to educators, said Courtney Cook, the Social Emotional Behavioral Health Coordinator at Prairie Lakes AEA. This grant will enable districts to train their school staff, high school students, and also other members of the school community to provide a more comprehensive and mental health support system, as well as strengthen the awareness of resources and connections with our community agencies. The primary trainings being implemented are youth and child mental health, first aid, which are programs developed by the National Council for Mental Well-Being and designed for adults supporting youth in the 5 through 12 and 12 through 18 age groups. New to the agency will be adult mental first aid to better equip administrators and leadership teams in supporting their peers and educators. Beyond that, and general crisis intervention trainings, the agency also offers suicide risk assessment workshops for small teens within the district to develop and implement a systematic plan for assessment and intervention of students at risk for suicide in their school. More than 1,500 educators in Prairie Lakes AEA have participated in MHFA training over the past 3 years. Agency team members have also supported 11 high schools in implementing teen mental health first aid, a curriculum and training designed for sophomores, juniors, and seniors to notice and respond to signs and symptoms experienced by their peers and to connect them to adults trained in YMHFA. Prior to the grant, the cost of MHFA was the responsibility of the district. A key motivator to apply for the SAMHSA grant was to alleviate that cost so that all high schools had access to the program. Thanks to this grant, the agency expects to train close to 10,000 additional educators and students over the next 5 years. Another focus of the grant is to continue to establish linkages among the Iowa Mental Health and Disability Regions, known as MDUS, and community agencies to enhance referral processes for accessing mental health services and provide education regarding community resources in general. With a shortage of substitute teachers in many school districts, the training offered is a blend of virtual, face-to-face, and even some outside the school day, which helps keep teachers in the classroom as much as possible. Education is a tough profession, and the past year has taken an even bigger toll on the mental well-being of our teachers, Cook said. These trainings will help our educators recognize and support the mental health and well-being of their students and their school staff. We hope that once districts have trained their staff, that this funding will allow us to branch into the school community, which could include the school board, coaches, parents, paramedics, and others who support the well-being of students and staff. Prairie Lakes Area Education Agency serves 38 public school districts and 11 accredited non-public schools in 14 counties, including Calhoun, Clay, Buena Vista, Dickinson, Emmett Green, Hamilton, Humboldt, Kossuth, Palo Alto, Pocahontas, Sac, Webster, and Wright. The agency provides special education, professional learning, media technology, and general education services to support 32,000 children and students from birth to age 21. There's a story in the newspaper, a reminder, The Webster County Health Department is hosting a booster clinic for the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine for certain individuals, and that was held today, Wednesday. The clinic will be held at Iowa Central Community College East Campus from 3 to 7 p.m. Residents are asked to bring their COVID-19 vaccination card with them to the drive-through clinic. Individuals must have received their second Pfizer vaccine at least 6 months prior. The booster doses are available for adults age 65 and older, as well as individuals of specific at-risk groups, including individuals 65 years and older and residents in a long-term care setting. Individuals 50 to 64 years old with underlying medical conditions, individuals 18 to 49 with underlying medical conditions based on their individual benefits and risks, individuals 18 to 64 who are at increased risk for COVID-19 exposure and transmission because of occupational or institutional setting. The Pfizer booster dose is available by appointment only, and starting Wednesday. To schedule an appointment, call Webster County Health Department at 573-4107 or book an appointment at webstercountyia.org. The Webster County Speedway will be holding its first ever Iowa Figure 8 races at the Webster County Fairgrounds on Friday and Saturday. Races begin at 7 o'clock on Friday and 6 o'clock on Saturday. For more information, call Corey Krug at 515-321-6010. A reminder that 5th Avenue South and Kenyon Road between 8th and 12th Streets will be partially open for traffic. According to the Fort Dodge City Engineering staff, traffic will be limited to one lane in either direction. That section of street has been completely closed for a month while a new large storm sewer was installed. Let's go ahead and take a look at From Our Files. From Our Files usually takes us back 15 years, and today is no different. Going back 15 years to September 2006, there's a picture of James Wu and a member of the Dodger golf team as he takes part in the CIML Iowa Conference meet. And the picture shows that he had just made what appears to be a somewhat short putt. We'll head next over to the news of record and see what's happened to whom. Police logs on Monday, unknown problem at 1100 block North 26th Street, shots fired 10 block North 7th Street, burglary 700 block South 30th, car accident 200 block North 15th Street, suspicious person 1200 block 1st Avenue South, nuisance 1600 block 12th Avenue Southwest, juvenile problems 900 block South 18th. Criminal mischief, 2200 block 15th Avenue South. Theft, 1400 block 2nd Avenue South. Suspicious vehicle, 200 block of South 8th Street. Sexual abuse was reported. Unknown problem, 2400 block of 370th Street. Theft, 1st Avenue North and North 13th Street, and also the 900 block of Central Avenue. A fight near 1st Avenue South and South 12th Street. Hit and run, 1200 block 6th Avenue South. Soliciting was reported at 300 block 3rd Street Northwest. Car accident, 2300 block 5th Avenue South. Civil problem, 800 block of South 7th Avenue North. Burglary in progress, 800 block South 18th Street. And also 3300 block of 5th Avenue South. Trespassing, 400 block South 10th Street. Shots fired, 3000 block 1st Avenue South. Criminal mischief, 2300 block of 1st Avenue South. Suspicious person, 1800 block 1st Avenue South. And a suspicious vehicle near South 17th Street and 12th Avenue South. And that is today's news of record. We're going to head over next to the Messenger opinion page. Unique Party Gets Headstones Looking Good is the title of today's Messenger editorial. Some of the headstones in Oakland Cemetery in Fort Dodge are more than 100 years old, but at first glance, a visitor probably would not know that. Thanks to the efforts of about 30 volunteers, many of those stones are neat, clean, and sharp-looking. Oakland Cemetery on North 15th Street was established in 1859, about 6 years after the city of Fort Dodge was established. It is the last resting place of William Williams, the city's founder, and thousands of others. There are 7,000 headstones in the cemetery, which is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The passage of time in Iowa's climate has an impact on those headstones. Rick Carl, a member of the Friends of the Oakland Cemetery Board, saw a need to get those headstones cleaned. He also had a unique idea to get that accomplished. He set up a headstone cleaning party on Saturday, providing cleaning supplies and asking for volunteers to come and help. About 30 people, including kids from the Elkhorn Early Birds 4-H Club, showed up. By the time they were done, a lot of weathered headstones were looking new. Carly praised the volunteers, especially the young people. "These kids have brought the elbow grease," he told the Messenger. "They are excellent." The Oakland Cemetery Project was a remarkable effort that helped to refresh a key link in the city's history. We thank Carly and his colleagues on the Friends of the Oakland Cemetery Board for their ongoing care of the site. We also thank those who spent some of their Saturday spraying and scrubbing headstones. Their work made a difference. And that is today's Messenger editorial. We'll head over next to the Daily Freeman Journal. The first article is entitled Inclusive Arts. Two special projects by Legacy Learning Boone River Valley this fall are offering opportunities to showcase the work of people with autism. Early this spring, Legacy Learning Boone River Valley found an opportunity with Arts Midwest for a grant that is part of the recovery funds. They wanted to focus on getting artists work and targeted a grant for rural communities and underserved populations, said Maureen Siemens of LLBRV. Siemens said the group decided to write the grant to benefit persons with disabilities and, in particular, persons with autism. "We've always been inclusive of people with disabilities, but we had never aimed at a grant at that," she said. The grant will mean LLBRV can present two community events. The event, first event rather, is a concert with music and a light show for the residents of Elm Street House, Wilson House, Friends Forever, Webster City, special education students, and special needs residents of the community. Siemens said the concert is set for Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. at West Twin Park. Mojo Productions will provide the music and lights. There will be an interactive art activities, and the concert will begin at 7 p.m. Sweet Treats from Jewel will be on site with ice cream, and La Bamba Food Truck will also be there. The public is also invited to join in the fun, according to Siemens. "All of the people who live in the Elm Street House really enjoy music, and it's a real way of expressing themselves. They spend a lot of time online and know a lot about music." The second event features a six-session workshop on stop-action animation with four young directors who have autism. Siemens said artists Christina LeClaire and Patrick O'Loughlin are working with the four directors to create animation films using a stop-action format. "This week will be the students' third week, and oh my gosh, things are really beginning to take shape," she said. "Three young men and one young woman are creating stories and are starting to work with the stop-action animation. Each has built a background to create a backdrop for the film. The directors are using a variety of materials to tell their stories, including action figures and other small elements. They are really having an interesting time." Like any feature film, once the production is complete, there will be a red carpet premiere to showcase the young filmmakers' work. "We're having a premiere at the Webster Theater Monday night, October 18th. The public is invited to join the filmmakers that night to see their creations on the big screen." Siemens said she hopes that the initial workshop will be just the first of many to come in the future. "We really like to see this grow and offer this opportunity to young more people," she said. Additional COVID-19 mitigation efforts will be considered by the Webster City School Board Monday night when the board meets in regular session at 6 o'clock. The board passed a revised return to learn plan 2 weeks ago on the same day that a federal judge issued a temporary injunction to Governor Kim Reynolds' mask mandate ban for school districts. At that meeting, Superintendent Dr. Mandy Ross said she had not had time to review the court's ruling and had not received any guidance on the matter yet. Since the injunction was announced, Several school districts across the state have re-implemented mandatory masking for students and staff. Also on Monday, the board is expected to appoint middle school assistant principal Will Brock as the district Title IX coordinator. The board will also consider a child care worker bonus fund application for the Mighty Trojan Child Care Center, a fundraising request from the high school music department to sell Pampered Chef items is also on the agenda. Contract recommendations for Greta Nelson to serve as the spring play advisor, and for Alexis Worden and Lori McKnight, both paraeducators, are expected to be approved. The board will also hear a report from Dr. Ross. New members of Williams American Legion Post 633 were recently installed, including Evan Mark, Logan Mark, Devin Hensley, Hunter Dilly, Commander Derek Greenfield, John Keane, Bob Keane, Lynn Elm, and Carol Oss. For public meetings, we talked about the Webster City School Board. Hamilton County Board of Supervisors met at 9 o'clock on Tuesday. The Van Deese Medical Center Board of Trustees met at 7 o'clock on Tuesday as well. President Lincoln is expected to visit Webster City. It's not often that a U.S. president visits Webster City, but on Wednesday, October 6th at 6 o'clock, the Kendall Young Library will host a portrayal of President Abraham Lincoln by Kevin J. Wood. Wood, who lives in Michigan, bears a strong resemblance to Lincoln. On his website, Wood said, as a young man, he reached a height of 6 feet 3 inches and grew a beard. It was then that he first realized the resemblance. However, it was several years later when he decided to combine the appearance. His love of history and interest in Lincoln to create the presentation. Wood said he has given more than 1,300 presentations in 31 states, Washington, D.C., Canada, and Spain. Adults and children will enjoy hearing a firsthand account from Abraham Lincoln himself of the history of the United States during his time. His program at the Kendall Young Library is entitled A New Birth of Freedom. Library officials said the program will run 60 minutes and is followed by an additional time of questions, answers, photos, and informal interaction. Masks are required. Limited seating is available. Sleep out for a cause. The weather forecast for the next several days looks to be perfect for a sleep out, but that's not always the case for those who are forced to sleep outside because they are homeless. A special event is being held all across Iowa to help raise money and awareness to help combat youth homelessness. Reggie's Sleep Out is a fundraiser sponsored by YSS that encourages young people, families, and community members to sleep out to raise money and awareness of the homeless problem. The event runs Friday through October 3rd. According to Kate Garvey, YSS of Hamilton County Executive Director, the event is named for Reggie Kelsey, a Des Moines youth who aged out of the foster care system in 2001. Within 3 months of his 18th birthday, he was found dead beside the Des Moines River. According to YSS, Kelsey had an endearing personality and struggled with mental illness and depression. He worried about how he would survive on his own after he was removed from his last foster home. He reportedly bounced from shelter to shelter. After his death, the Iowa Aftercare Services Network was formed to provide services and structure to youth aging out of foster care. Garvey said pre-pandemic Reggie's Sleep Out was a one-night event with 1,000-plus participants spending one night on the field at Drake Stadium using cardboard enclosures they had constructed. This year, the event has transitioned to a virtual hybrid event that asks families and youth groups to choose a night to sleep out in their own backyard or facility to raise funds and learn more about fighting youth homelessness. Garvey said the sleep out is not about pretending to be homeless. The purpose is to join others in solidarity for those in need. She said that all funds raised in Hamilton County will go to support programs at YSS of Hamilton County for homeless and at-risk youth. To take part in Reggie's Sleep Out, individuals and teams should pick a safe location in their yard, home, or apartment. The key is to make an effort to get out of your comfort zone, so no beds. Teams can organize a sleep out night with youth groups, neighbors, friends, families, and clubs. All who take part in Reggie's Sleepout are asked to sign up at reggiesleepout.org. Hamilton County residents can also make contributions to help provide YSS programming our area use. Donors can visit reggiesleepout.org to make contributions. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituary page. Arnie Clausen. Arnie Clausen, 94, of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, September 26 at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Arnold Clausen was born February 25, 1927 in rural Webster County to Fern and Victor Clausen. After graduating from Fort Dodge Senior High, he enlisted in the Navy. After an honorable discharge, he received a BA from the University of Northern Iowa and became an industrial arts teacher. He taught for 39 years and was instrumental in starting the wrestling program. After Arnie retired, he became a counselor at Children and Families of Iowa and then finished his career at age 93 as an employee at United Bank of Iowa. Arnie was active in Kiwanis Camera Club and First Presbyterian Church. He is survived by his wife, Lily Mae Clausen, two sons, Mark Clausen and David Clausen, a son-in-law, Paul Zierke, four granddaughters, Jennifer Hahn, Diana Bikert, Amy Aronson, Susan Elliott, nine great-grandchildren, one nephew, and two nieces. He was preceded in death by his daughter, Mary Zierke, his sister, Barbara Johnson, his parents, Victor and Fern Clausen, an infant brother, as well as grandparents, aunts, and uncles. Visitation at Gunderson Funeral Home on Friday, October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. Services are 10:30 on Saturday at First Presbyterian Church. The family kindly requests masks to be worn. Graveside services following at North Lawn Cemetery with full military honors. Lunch served at the church following the graveside service. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a donation to Youth Shelter Care of North Central Iowa, 301 Avenue M West, Fort Dodge. From Algona, Donna Borman. Services for Donna Borman will be 10:30 Friday at Divine Mercy Catholic Parish, St. Joseph, in St. Joseph. Visitation 4 to 7 Thursday at the church. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Shirley Eckelberger. Shirley J. Eckelberger, 78, of Otho, died Tuesday, September 21st at Unity Point Trinity Regional Medical Center. A gathering of family and friends will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, October 5th at Bruce's Funeral Home. Interment will follow at Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the discretion of the family. Bruce Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Gallery, Leon Skoglund. Leon B. Skoglund, 98, died Tuesday, September 28th at the Gardens Retirement and Assisted Living Community in Jefferson. Services are pending at Palmer Funeral Home in Gallery. From Eagle Grove, Lewis Larson. Visitation for Lewis Larson will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday at Faust Funeral Home. Masks are required. Graveside services 11 a.m. Saturday at Rose Hill Cemetery. Faust Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Gene Hayes. Gene R. Hayes, 81, of Fort Dodge, died Tuesday, September 28th at his home. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and cremation services. And that is our look at today's obituary page. Heading over to the Marshalltown Times-Republican, McFarland Clinic plans to expand OB and GYN services in Marshalltown. I knew I'd do that at some point. McFarland Clinic Marshalltown is expanding women's health services with a full range of obstetrics and gynecology care and services. Services will be available Wednesday at 312 East Main Street, location on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, beginning in October. Board-certified obstetrician, gynecologist Dr. Bonnie Beer and Beth Suley, D.O., will be providing obstetric and gynecology services on the second and fourth Monday of each month. Certified nurse midwives Rachel Hayward, Crystal Ittings, Alice May, Mattia Otten, and Aubrey Remsburg will rotate weekly coverage to Marshalltown. In a news release issued Tuesday, McFarland said its obstetrics and gynecology department is dedicated to keeping women well with a full range of women's health services. We look forward to establishing and continuing health care relationships for women in the Marshalltown area from adolescent to menopause ages, Dr. Beer said. OBGYN physicians and midwives care for all aspects of women's health, including preventative health and reproductive health. Services provided in Marshalltown include annual and wellness exams, contraceptive counseling, family planning, infertility evaluation, prenatal services for expectant mothers, postpartum care, and menopausal evaluation and treatment. Obstetric delivery will continue to take place at Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. Future plans for OBGYN outreach to Marshalltown include adding ultrasound services. Providing obstetric and gynecological women's health services locally is beneficial to women in Marshalltown and its surrounding communities, especially when it comes to convenience, said Alice May at CNM. With heroin on the rise locally, Marshall County supervisors voted to seek a grant to fund overtime hours for deputies who are investigating drug hotspots and overdoses. At its regular meeting, the board voted to approve the application and acceptance of a federal CAMP grant award for the Methamphetamine Drug Hotspots Grant Program. Marshall County Sheriff Joel Phillips said the county has received the grant for a couple of years and has traditionally used it to fund overtime hours for deputies investigating methamphetamine hotspots. Included in the grant this year is funding for heroin investigations and overdoses. Phillips said heroin is becoming more prevalent in the Marshalltown area. I think it's been kind of that hidden investigation, a portion of that, because a lot of times these overdoses we don't know about until afterwards, Phillips said. So we're finding out some of those unexpected deaths were predicated and classified as a suicide have had those heroin overdoses. He said an agency in Des Moines has been reviewing those deaths to identify the source. Well, Phillips said heroin has been more prevalent in the past few years in a large college town such as Ames or Iowa City. Marshall County is not immune to the problem. It's becoming more of a problem here in Iowa, Phillips said. It's something that you don't know where this stuff is coming from. So they're trying to identify those sources to be able to target those organizations that are distributing all the heroin and all the fentanyl. It is becoming a problem. Phillips said this year's grant of $6,000 is about $1,500 lower than in past years. He said funding for the grant has been cut across the board for local agencies throughout Iowa. Additional funding options and adjustments are available if the county reaches the max amount, he said. A milestone reunion is set for this weekend as members of the Marshalltown High School class of 1971 are preparing for a trip down memory lane. Approximately 75 to 100 classmates from near and far will be in Marshalltown to celebrate their 50th class reunion. Marilyn Downs, who is part of the planning committee for the reunion, said class reunions are a good time to renew old friendships for those who haven't seen each other in years, while it is also an opportunity to meet with new classmates who didn't know each other as well 50 years ago. That's what I discovered with our local classmates in our planning, is that we are getting to know each other now so many years later, where we didn't maybe know each other 50 years ago or hang out with the same crowd, Downs said. It's nice, as we're older now and more mature, to have those open doors to get to know classmates we may not have known. Living in Marshalltown, Downs said she feels she has a responsibility to provide a date, time, and location for classmates to reunite, share memories, and make new ones. She said former classmates will update each on their lives while also likely talking about what's been going on in the world. We did go through the era of the Vietnam War when there were a lot of protests about us being there, Downs said. Just up through now, there's been so many changes that we've seen in our society and our whole world, so probably we'll have some discussions about that. The first gathering is Friday at the Mallory Irvine Mansion in Marshalltown, owned by the Marshall County Historical Society. Director Michelle Roseboro will give reunioners a tour of the mansion, and classmates will be able to hang out around the house and lawn to catch up. On Saturday, the class will meet at the Elmwood Country Club for a dinner with New York Dueling Pianos providing the entertainment. The audience will have the chance to participate and reminisce as the New York Dueling Pianos will place tunes from the 70s era while taking requests. A video to play Saturday night will memorialize members of the class of 1971 who have passed away. While Downs has remained in Marshalltown since graduating high school, she anticipates those who haven't returned since the 2018 tornado and 2020 derecho will be surprised for the changes. For those who haven't been here since 2018, they will be very stunned to travel down Main Street and see the trees that are missing, the buildings that are gone. The courthouse is not completed yet. It will be a sight to see for our classmates returning to Marshalltown, Downs said. Cindy Soderberg, who is also a part of the planning committee for the reunion, said she has thought a lot about the upcoming reunion's significance. She says it's hard to fathom not having a class reunion. It's hard for me to believe that I've been out of school for that long and just how quickly time flies and how precious our relationships are and how important it is to keep up those meaningful relationships, Soderberg said. For me, a class reunion is the perfect space to do that. The City Council approves a $9.4 million State Street project along with other projects. The city is moving forward on the State Street Reconstruction Project, which is part of the Downtown Implementation Plan. During Monday's regular City Council meeting, the Council approved entering into a loan agreement for $9.4 million to tackle the first phase of a State Street Center Street Viaduct, street improvements in dangerous and dilapidated buildings. The softball complex parking lot project, budgeted at $200,000, is also included among the projects falling under general obligation bonding. In a separate item, the council approved combining these loans into one. Where things look different than usual in this process is the city will enter into a loan agreement before it is able to hold a bond sale, which won't be until November. This is definitely something that is out of order, the normal process of how we would start to spend those bond funds, said Jessica Kinzer, city administrator. There is a reason for doing it, and that is to ensure we can get this out to bid as quickly as it can be fully designed and moved forward. Mark Eaton, a candidate for an at-large seat on the council, spoke during a public comment period in the resolutions portion of the meeting. So basically, we're going to enter into a contract to spend money that we don't have before we have it, he asked. The council also approved a professional services agreement, which will see the city again use the services of engineering firm Bolton and Mink. The firm will be hired for design services and construction oversight for the State Street reconstruction cost at $923,326. Councilor Gary Thompson asked Kinzer if the services which Bolton and Mink landed was put out to bid. She said the work was not put out to bid. Why is that? This is $1 million of taxpayer money, he said. Kinzer responded that the State Street project is based on designs from Bolton and Mink. In the past, the city hasn't normally taken designs from one engineer and passed them to another engineer to oversee construction. She noted Bolton and Mink did win the bid when the downtown implementation plan moved from the vision phase to actual implementation. This is the complete reconstruction of 6 blocks of roadway downtown. It's a very complicated project, Kinzer said. We want to, at some level, have half of the project completed in 2022. Having the council approve this tonight adds basically 6 weeks to our design process where we can hopefully get this out to bid, I think, in the February or March timeframe. The council approved the agreement with Bolton and Mink 5-1, with Thompson as the sole no vote. In other business, the council approved an amendment to the Code of Ordinances repealing the city's Human Rights Commission. This item was discussed at the September 13th meeting when the council and staff agreed it hadn't been able to fill the commission. I'm working on a plan, some conservation for strategic planning this year. related to diversity, equity, and inclusion and what we can do as a city, Kinzer said. I would like to publicly thank Pastor Greg Davison because he has carried this on his shoulders for many years, said Mayor Joel Greer. A portion of Lynn Creek Trail will be closed later this week for construction. About 1¾ miles of the trail will be closed beginning Thursday. The sections closing will be Mega 10 Park east to May Street, Main Street northeast to Marion Street, Nicholson Ford Park. Construct will be tearing up the existing asphalt in these sections and replacing it with concrete. The cost of the project will be about $500,000. Parks and Recreation Director Jeff Hubbard said leftover council designated local option sales tax money made it possible to tackle more of the trail than originally expected. Originally, only about 1 mile of the trail was to be addressed. It was scheduled in the budget this year, but with the extra money, we could do almost twice as much, Hubbard said. This is a section we didn't crack seal and coat from Grimes Farm all the way out to Riverview. The trails won't be cleared during the winter months, so heavy machinery will not be used on the concrete, which will help keep it from cracking. Concrete is being used to replace the asphalt because of the durability and competitive costs with asphalt. The lifespan of the new concrete trail could be as long as 20 years. The trail construction is expected to be complete by the end of November. Hubbard said the sections of trail undergoing construction are heavily trafficked. From Riverview to Grimes Farm, we're talking hundreds of people every day, he said. Every time I drive out to the Riverview or past the softball complex, there are always cars parked out there for people walking the trail or riding their bikes. It is important for those who walk or ride these parts of the trail to stay off of them while construction is ongoing. The trail will not be safe to use even when construct isn't on site. We are excited to have this project starting and can't wait for it to be finished. This will give the Lynn Creek Trail a smooth ride from Riverview to Grimes Farm once completed, Hubbard said. Hubbard said the next big trail project to look forward to will be building out towards Albion. He said he is working with Trails Incorporated on finding funding for the project. Since it ventures outside of Marshalltown city limits, it would not be supported by city funding. Monarch program nets fun time at Grimes Farm. Monarchs are moving their way through Marshall County due south to Mexico. County naturalist Emily Herring said many of the orange-clad butterflies actually stayed ahead of the cold front that came through this week, but there are still some hunkered down in the prairie on Grimes Farm. During Live and Local Thursday, Herring welcomed families to Grimes Farm to talk about monarch butterflies. They even tried to catch some. There was not any luck in netting one of the butterflies, but children still wrangled a few various little bugs. We had a big influx last week, Herring said, of the monarchs. Now with the cold front coming, we've been having trouble finding them. I saw a couple around 3 this afternoon. Herring said Marshall County Conservation generally tags about 500 monarchs during their fall migration. Researchers in Mexico will actually see these tags and report to the University of Kansas, where monarch populations are being studied. Herring, with the help of a couple of young visitors, tagged and released 2 monarchs at the end of presentation Thursday. The nets were handed out for families to try their luck at catching monarchs and anything else they could find. For one child, it was Daddy Long-Leg Spider, and for another child, it was a small grasshopper. After attendees returned with their bug nets, they were given care packages, which includes milkweed seeds. The family of monarchs seen in the area at this time of year are what Herring called milkweed butterflies. Monarchs are picky eaters, Herring said, and their larvae will only eat milkweed. This is why a healthy habit of milkweed is important for promoting the monarch population. Because the monarchs in Marshall County will migrate to Mexico, it is important for them to have a healthy habitat in both of their homes, Herring said. Marshall County Conservation has done a monarch program for several years, according to Herring. While the monarch event was happening, the sounds of dueling fiddles could be heard ringing from the nearby Leonard Grimes Memorial Amphitheater. Dueling Fiddles features violinist Genevieve Salmon and Hannah Wool. They played familiar tunes like Guns N' Roses' Sweet Child of Mine to an audience of more than 100 people. Herring said attendance at Live and Local has varied this year, much like it would any other year. We've had decent turnouts all summer, she said. This is the first time we're doing a kids program with Live and Local. It's a fun way for kids to get involved and their parents to listen to music. We're going to head over to the sports page. Steady Progress is the title. in the first swim meet of the season, the Fort Dodge girls lost by 1 point at Southeast Polk. Dodger head coach Ashley Beaumont didn't put too much weight in the opener. 3 weeks later, the Dodgers turned the tide on the Rams 70 by a score of 98-72. We swam extremely well. It's nice to have a rematch against them from the first time around. We swam hard. This is good for the girls to see the change and how much they are improving. It was a measuring stick for the Dodgers, who won 8 events, including 2 relays. In the first meeting, the Dodgers captured 6 events in only 1 relay. At the beginning of the season, we weren't quite sure where we were going to put everyone, Beaumont said. We were still finding out where our strengths were, and now that we are getting closer to the end of the season, it's good to be settling into an identity. Junior Eileen Fierick returned to full action after recovering from an injury and was a double winner for the Dodgers. Julia Eastman was also a double gold medalist. Fierick won the 100 freestyle and the 50 freestyle. This was Fierick's first time back, and she's still not 100%. She's not quite back to being normal Eileen, but she is trying to get ready for the end of the year and the postseason. Eastman, a freshman at Southeast Valley, doubled up in the 100 butterfly and the 100 backstroke. Julia didn't have her best time, but she was still able to come away with wins, Beaumont said. Our relays are actually a little stronger and gaining a little time. We are trying to find out what the best times are and what we want to push with what lineup. Junior McKenna Kammerer won the 500 freestyle, and sophomore Reagan Wooldridge won the 100 breaststroke. I'm really happy for Reagan and McKenna. They have been kind of struggling until Tuesday. It's been hard in practice. I hope this gives them a morale boost and they push through. The quartet of Eastman, Wooldridge, freshman Addison Daniel, and Fierick won the 200 medley relay, an event they lost in the first meet. Fierick, Eastman, Wooldridge, and Kammerer once again won the 400 freestyle relay. The Dodgers finished 1-2-3 in the 50 freestyle. Behind Fierick's win was Rebecca Kenville and Maddie Pulse. The Dodgers are back in action Thursday when they host Carroll and Spencer in the Dodger pool. For the first time in school history, Southeast Valley is the top-ranked football team in the state. Following victories over then number 1 OABCIG and number 3 Estherville Lincoln Central, the undefeated Jaguars, who are 5-0, have climbed the summit to the top of Class 2A's mountain, the Associated Press announced on Tuesday. This week, the Jaguars traveled to Clarion Goldfield Dalles, who was a previously ranked squad in 2A. Pocahontas area dropped one spot to number 7 in Class 2A to 8th. Greene County moved to number 6 in 2A. Humboldt in 3A is one of 6 unbeaten teams in Class 3A and stayed put at number 4 with a 5-0 mark. Algona is 4-1, 9th in 3A. Newell Fonda is 8 in A player and will face 4th-rated Remsen St. Mary's this Friday night. After a 41-14 loss to Webster City, Fort Dodge dropped out of the 4A top 10 for the first time this season. Top-ranked squads in the state are Ankeny in 5A, North Scott 4A, Harlan 3A, Van Meter 1A, Wes Hancock in A, and Anita Cam in 8-player. Kelly Bolin made her fall debut a memorable one. Bolin, a Humboldt graduate, captured the Waldorf Invitational title with a round of 75. The Iowa Central golfer finished 2 shots ahead of Ashley Michael from Des Moines area for the win. In the spring, Bolin qualified for the national meet for the Tritons. She had spent the early part of the fall season beginning classes in the dental hygiene program. Extremely excited and proud for Kelly for her win Sunday, said head coach Chris Graywin. She's been working extremely hard and has been an unbelievable teammate. Her class schedule this year has limited the amount of time she's been able to compete and practice. It is great to see her have such a great debut to her season. Corey Norris shot 100 to place 32nd. Ella Dinsdale was 33rd at 108 for Iowa Central. Next action for Iowa Central is Friday when they head to the Fox Ridge Golf Course in Dyke for the Hawkeye Community College Fall Classic. Iowa Central tennis squads were in action. The Iowa Central men's and women's tennis teams were in action at the ITA Regional Championships hosted by Cali. Joining the Tritons were number 2 and host Cali, 3rd-ranked Seward and Pratt for the singles and doubles draws. On the men's side, Nolan Leduri reached the consolation finals, and Eduardo Valencia made the consolation semifinals. Arthur Proud advanced to the round of 16, while Zamani Moya, Theo Devals, and Nicholas Espinoza were also in action. Iowa Central will head to Pella to face Central in a women's duel on Tuesday, with the men hosting Buena Vista on Wednesday. Iowa Central opened their bowling season at the Golden Eagles Invitational in Rockford, Illinois. The Triton women were 5th out of 9 teams, while the men placed 11th out of 22. St. Xavier won both team titles. Iowa Central heads to the 50th annual Midwest Collegiate Championships in Milwaukee this Saturday and Sunday. We'll take a quick look at this date in history. It is September 29th. On this date in 1982, the cyanide-laced Tylenol killings began, in which 7 people in the Chicago area eventually lost their lives. 1995, Mexican-American voting rights advocate Willie Velasquez was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In 2005, reporter Judith Miller was released from prison. In 2008, the Dow suffered the largest single-day drop. In 1780, Benedict Arnold's accomplice was sentenced to death. In 1953, the New York Times article claims Russians want the American dream. In 2006, a school principal was murdered by a student in Wisconsin. In 1988, Stacy Allison became the first American woman to reach the summit of Mount Everest. In 1913, inventor Rudolf Diesel vanished. In 1907, the great singing cowboy Gene Autry was born in Texas. In 1918, Allied forces break through the Hindenburg Line. And in 1939, Nazis and Communists divvied up Poland. And that's just a handful of things that happened on this date, September 29th. We'll take a look next at the weather forecast. Showers and thunderstorms on Thursday, a 70% chance with a high of 80. Rain chances continue Thursday night, 60% chance, low 62. Friday, showers and thunderstorms, high of 76 with a 60% chance of rain. Mostly cloudy Friday night, low of 59. Saturday, chance of rain showers, a 40% chance of rain, a high of 75. Rain shower chances continue Saturday night, low of 56 with a 30% chance of rain. Sunday, chance of rain showers, high of 72. Sunday night, low of 49. Monday, chance of rain showers, high of 66. Partly cloudy Monday night, low of 46. Mostly cloudy on Tuesday, a high of 65. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger, with a lot of help from the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal and the Marshalltown Times Republican. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you for joining me for this time together. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org, and we appreciate your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, take good care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you again real soon, right here on IRIS.